heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Less than 250 years since the Declaration of Independence was signed, 1776, right? But then let's take a look now at the Chinese people and how old that nation is. And here's the big lesson that I tell you. And the Chinese learn over thousands of years, as a lot of these countries do. They learn thousands of years of history here, friends. And they go through cycles, they go through their power cycles within, but they've learned through those thousands of years of history. And that's what you've got with a lot of these countries. But here's the problem I continue to point out is our political leaders, they just learn by the next election. That's all they're concerned with is what's the next election about. And that's the danger always of a representative republic. I mean, it's a beautiful thing. But there's always a flip side to this, isn't there now, right? I mean, what are the alternatives? Well, we don't want those options or alternatives. But what does that mean? What it means to me is that we have to stay on our game. We have to be alert. We have to be focused. We have to really come together as a people, which we're not doing clearly. I mean, we got all these divisions in the country, which are serious divisions. But China's been a big talk now because of the trade deal. And we're going to talk about the trade deal. Well, there's a couple of components here. You have the economic component, and you have the military component as well, the political component. Political economic experts are really suggesting that within about 15 years from now, and you probably have heard this, that China's economy will surpass America's and become the largest in the world. Now, when I heard that the first time, I kind of cringed and thought, I don't want to hear that, man. We're going to become second fiddle to who? To China? You know? And then, of course, and you look at a lot of the mistakes we've made over the many administrations. Again, the problems we're having with China today are not new. They've been building for a long time. It's been the lack of leadership because our politicians don't think long term. That's why I start at that point to you. They're not thinking long term. They think short term. We have to hold them accountable, people, to think more in the long term nature. No, that's another, you know, and I know it's a, you know, it's not really a sidetrack, but maybe that's another reason we should consider term limits. Maybe it's another reason. Think about that, please. Well, because if they're always thinking about the next election and they're selling us out because they're not really making the right decision, I mean, maybe that's something to really think about. Maybe that's another reason to consider term limits. So in other words, if they're going to term out in a short period of time, maybe some of that decision making ends up being what's right for the country. And less about the next election, because you always hear that. It's always, you know, politically speaking, it's always about, well, you know, that's not a good political move. I hate it when they say that. But, you know, they always say it's not a good political move. That's politics, people. Politics. It's not a good political move. What the hell is he doing, right? Well, he didn't make a good move. So it's all about politics. So what does political mean? Well, political means it's not made the best guy wins. It's made their political party wins. And then, of course, who really wins? Do we, the people, win at that point? So if in 15 years, China becomes what they're saying, the largest in the world there, and at this moment, by the way, as you know, there's a consensus that has sort of formed around the Beltway in D.C. that now all of a sudden people are seeing that China is posing a significant threat to American interest and to our health and well-being. Now, this is after, of course, you know, people dismissed it all like it didn't really matter, like it wasn't a big deal, right? General Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had said that China probably poses the greatest threat to our nation by about 2025, he said. By about 2025. Christopher Wray, the FBI director, he says, one of the things we're trying to do is view the China threat as not just a whole of government threat, but a whole of society threat. And I think it's going to take a whole of society response by us. That's an interesting quote, I have to tell you, from Christopher Wray. You know, there's so there's this whole notion out there that Donald Trump, you know, created this trade war with China. What is he doing? And there are some interesting pieces to this story now about the trade, including we'll talk about the Democratic response to this as well, that Trump created this or something, that people really believe this. Well, that's what a lot of the media channels talk. This is the problem. It's the indoctrination of stupidness. And it's all over the place. It's on all those channels and networks. It's everywhere. It's just total stupidness. And it really is the blurring of the lines, which I'll be talking about today, politics and entertainment. The lines are blurred dramatically to me. You're not really, and that's what social media all is. It's political entertainment. It's all it is. They take these sound bites and they beat the drum hard and it gets fancy and they get more followers and likes and the endorphins flow and people feel good and you're a real SOB and I hate you and libs suck and, you know, conservative Republicans suck and it's just back and forth, right? And welcome to America, the free of the home, the brave, and right, the republic of we the people. That's where we are. People say Trump, well, you know, I remember things in the Obama administration. It was pretty heated. I mean, we didn't like Obama's policies. We didn't like a lot of the things he did. It was very heated back then, too. This didn't just happen. You can't blame this solely on Trump. I know that's what they try to do. But this has been here for a long time, people. It has. You've seen it coming. I've talked about this on radio 6, 7, 8 years ago. Trump wasn't even in the picture then. And we were talking about the same division, how we can never get the parties to talk. Well, because we don't fix the system. We don't fix anything. We think in short-term goals. That's the way the politicians think. And it's probably the way the American people think too, is instant gratification. How do I get instant gratification? Isn't that what it's all about, instant gratification? We all want instant gratification. Like, I want it now. How's it going to better my life right now, today? I don't care about the grandkids right now. Talk about me. Hell with the kids and the grandkids. Where's the instant gratification? You see? So you got the politicians now who have dug this hole with China. And you know, we're 3-1. We're upside down backwards here with trade. We're 3-1. So imports and exports, I'm saying, you see? And so we buy, you know, all their stuff. You know, we lost all the manufacturing. You've seen what happened throughout the 80s and 90s. That's why Trump ran on manufacturing. Middle America was dying. You know, they were dying. And of course, nobody was doing anything about it. And that whole field of where the whole fight started there. It's where he won, actually, is right there in the middle. Without middle America, he wouldn't have got the presidency. These are people. These are just real people. These are you people. This is us. These are real people. They're trying to make a living. Just trying to do the right thing. And I think that's what happened here. And so they seen all this coming with Trump. And that's where they bought in and they knew. But again, the trade war has been this whole trade. Well, they call it a trade war now, but the trade deficiency. Trade deficiency, I guess I call it, you know. I have a lot of other adjectives I can't use here with you, but as to why I call it and what we really have in front of us here is why this is. And, you know, from an economic standpoint, we heard Trump over many years before he ever came down the escalator talk about how we're being screwed over by China. I mean, he's been saying this. I've heard this from him for 20 years. We're being screwed over by China. He said, go back to YouTube and watch the tapes, people. We were being screwed over 25 years ago from China. And everybody knew it, but nobody's fixed the problem. So that's my point. And yet we keep electing these same people, but nothing ever really gets done. One of the things I also find very interesting is Chuck Schumer coming out. And the senator says that he, and y'all kind of had to do a gasp, I know, when you heard this. It was like, was that really Chucky Schumer said that? That he supported Trump on what he was doing with China. Like, everybody's like, well, there's got to be something up with that. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Chucky doesn't support anything. He doesn't even support the air this guy breathes, let alone a policy. What's up with that, I wonder? Chuck, why did he come up with that, you know? Maybe because he sees maybe there's potential for victory there and he wants some of the rewards for that victory. Is that possibly? Could it be headed in success? Or do we have China where we want them? Are they ready to say uncle? Do we have them where we want them? Because that's what you hear on some days, that we have them where we want them, you know, and that they have no choice. Now, China has a lot of pride. And Xi Jinping, Trump continues to come out and say what a great relationship he has with Xi Jinping. And it's funny how he does. That's his art of whatever you want to call it, art of deal, art of foreign diplomacy, art of something maybe. Yeah, I like Xi Jinping. I could go off a beer with the guy. What the hell? I like this guy. Yeah, we're friends. But our associates and our people are fighting like cats and dogs, and we can't seem to get a deal together. So China was close to a deal, we thought, but then they changed all the rules, which China tends to do. So how do you trust China at that point to make a deal to level the playing field? Because it comes back to the tariffs, people. Trump comes out and says, well, if you're not going to play fair, I'm going to give you 25% off the top. So there's your tariff. And of course, you could hear China, and they're having a lot of economic problems over there, by the way. Things are not so. So if that projection and prediction of by 2025, I think I said something like that, right? We're done for the rest of it. And if that's all, and what the experts and economists think as well, then that's interesting. So what's going to happen in the meantime? But in the meantime, all our phones and smartphones and all of that equipment is being made over there. The phone systems, computers, you know, all your computers are coming from China, your television receivers, monitors, a lot of electronics. That's what they do. They put all that stuff together. I remember as a kid always turning things over and reading, you know, made in China. And we used to laugh about that as a young boy, made in China or made in Taiwan. And it was kind of a sick joke back then. It was kind of a funny line. Like, we never thought anything was really made here in America. It was always made in China, made in Taiwan. And they kept doing that. And they did it and did it and did it and did it and made in China, made in China, made in China. And every time you bought everything at the store, it's made in China. And then everybody wants to sit here and say, where are all the jobs? What happened? I don't know what happened. Huh? You figure it out, people. Keep electing the same people to office. Let them stay there till they're in their 90s. They'll come out with a wheelchair and an oxygen tank. And they'll keep fighting for their jobs, and then you'll wonder, what happened? What happened? We never fixed that trade deal with China. It's gotten really bad now. What do you think? Yeah, it's gotten pretty bad. We're taking a bath. That's what it is. Yeah. So here comes Trump. He says, you know what? I had enough of this. And as the man today will tell you, that'll be on in a few moments, the man has balls of steel. Let's call it what it is. He's brazen. I think we can say he's got balls of steel. I think you will agree with me when I say that, yeah? But you have to have it. Right, dial it back. What other president in recent times has had balls of steel? Can you tell me, please? Can anybody answer that, please? Anybody know? Have you had a president? Did Obama have balls of steel? Did Bush? Bush 1, 2? I hope there's not a Bush 3 and 4, for God's sakes. And what about Clinton? He had balls of steel? Any of those cats have, you know? So they've all pushed the China thing off. Nobody cares. They're not fixing the problem. And now we have a problem. And Trump comes in and says, yeah, we got a problem economically. The trade deals are a mess. NAFTA's a mess. The trade we're doing with Mexico and Canada is a mess. Of course, the immigration's a mess. The whole thing is a mess, right? We've been talking about this, right, people? So here we are. So that's the deal today, friends, is China. How much of a threat is China? Militarily, again, they're building all these islands in the South China Seas. Nothing was supposed to happen there, remember? They promised. No, we're not going to do anything there. This is just for fun islands and a little sun for Xi Jinping. When he needs a little sun, we'll send him to the island. He'll feel better, yeah? So Xi Jinping and the puppets there needed some sun. So they built the islands and built the, you know, bought all the, building these sand and fill and, you know, and we've seen it happen. And you can see them on the radar making bigger and bigger land. It's like, you know, wow, soon it'll be a freaking continent, I guess. I don't know. But, and then all of a sudden, we're not putting anything on there. This is just, you know, again, we need some sun. We don't get any sun in China. So we're going to build the islands. So we have some sun. Beach balls and sun for Chinese. That's what it is, right? They can't have too much sun. It's not good for their skin. So now they got that in China, and we got to see it. But now they got the missiles, and they got the weapons, and they got the rest of it. So I don't know if that becomes a continent or what becomes of that. That's become a real sticking point as well, but that's a whole other conversation for another day. Well, it's the voice of a nation, people.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
I'm going to ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for injured and disabled police officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up the Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Joining me on the program, friends, Michael Johns is here. He's the national co-founder and leader of the Tea Party movement. And by the way, I think the Tea Party movement was pretty cool. He's a former White House speechwriter and a policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation. When I first seen your credentials, Michael, I was really juiced about the Tea Party stuff more than anything. I said, because here's a guy who is not afraid to spit in the wind. Yeah,
Malcolm, pleasure. Just on quickly on the Tea Party. I mean, if you go back to January of 2009, when Obama had taken office and Nancy Pelosi was running the House and the Democrats under Harry Reid had control of the Senate, it looked really bleak for anyone who had even moderate political viewpoints in this country, much less right of center political viewpoints. And so really the key to the Tea Party movement was offering the American people an opportunity to become politically engaged in ways that they hadn't historically been allowed to. And that ultimately led to tens of millions of Americans being engaged and taking back the House and taking back the Senate. And I would say, in a way, laying the groundwork for a populist 2016 candidate to really run against the Republican Party. I mean, it's important. Everyone talks about, Trump sort of leading Republicans to victory in 2016. It's important to remember that primary was one where the RNC did almost everything possible to defeat his candidacy. And consistent with, what you've said about his temperament, he fought and he, his victory was won over the Republican Party, over the Republican establishment, not over the party, but over the establishment. And so I think the Tea Party movement has been proven, immensely influential in offering at least some hope in reclaiming those three branches of government.
I thought when that was happening, I was a commentator on a lot of radio programs then, and I thought the Tea Party was going to become I was thinking maybe it might be a third party or that the Republican Party might morph or something. There was a big movement happening, and I remember I interviewed Jenny Beth, was her name? Was it one of the Tea Party founders? Jenny Beth,
mm-hmm. Jenny Beth Martin.
Martin, thank you, yeah. And she was very interesting. I did a television program with her as well, by the way, I hosted, and I had her on a couple of times here, and she's very well-spoken. But she was also on the front lines of that Tea Party stuff, and I thought it was going to become something more because, you could take a look at, I talked the other day about our debt. I was telling people just, about our debt, our listeners, how serious it is. We're $22.3 trillion right now. We passed $21 trillion a few months back here, January. Now, by the way, Michael, President Trump, he has added about 10% to the debt, as I recall from the top of my mind here. I believe it's about 10%. Obama, of course, did 100%. He doubled the debt. It was historical, by the way. That's a historical monument for his tombstone.
He added more to the debt in eight years than any president from Washington until his presidency.
Yeah, I told him that the other day. Just play that back and listen to what Michael said. In history, take every president in the history of the Republic and add them all together, and you wouldn't equate to what Barack Obama did for debt for this nation. And here's the thing. President Trump, which I spoke about the other day, spoke about that debt. And but he hasn't been able to get his hands around it yet because of all these problems that are going on. And his focus right now is on building income streams. That's why he's doing all these trade deals and all this manufacturing, try to handle the farmers and the coal and the coal people. And, you know, you got all these fires burning, correct?
Right. Yeah, well, he has his priorities right, in my viewpoint. I mean, I don't believe this country can even sustain itself without a thriving middle class and without a thriving working class version of the country. We can't simply be one of...
You mean we can't send it to China, you're saying, right? We can't send it to China.
Correct.
I mean, come on, Michael, you know? And Michael, our politicians over the last 20 years have all sent it to China. And I just scratch my head when I hear some of the talking points right now about China that they're worried about. And I'm saying, what did you fools think was going to happen when you carve out and rot out the middle America and you throw it all away, and then you want to know what happened. And then we have these major deficits. So let's talk about China now and President Trump and the tariffs. So everybody was wondering if the other shoe would drop, if he would do this. Now, this is really a game of, some people call this, Michael, a game of chicken. Some call it the shell game or the uncle game. But either way, it's a game of dare. On a big level. And of course, Xi Jinping, you know already, you know very well, better than most, the Chinese are very prideful people. If you piss on their tulips, they're not going to be happy, Michael. They're not going to say graciously thank you. You're going to alienate them somewhat, which is kind of what's happened before historically with China. So now here we are, and Trump has sort of done that now. This is my language, not yours, but it's the way I speak. But I think he's kind of pissed on their tulips with the terrorist thing, 25%. And you could hear the gas coming from, like, you're kidding me, right? Of course, he had no choice, I think. He probably had to do that because you can't call them bluff and then not do what you say. That would be the red line that has got the last administration into trouble. You can't be drawing red lines all over the place and not follow through. So what happens now? How daring was this that he did it? And will China come around is the question.
Well, I think the one thing you have to say is in addressing the China issue head on, both in the campaign and now in its administration, and speaking bluntly and truthfully to the American people about what's been transpiring in China and in U.S.-China trade relations, has that helped or hurt our ability to negotiate with China on these issues? And I think you have to say it's helped because we have never had such high-level, encouraging discussions with China in the last three or four decades. I mean, this is the closest that we've gotten to an actual breakthrough on the multiple issues that have led to this $420 billion trade deficit annually that we now have with China. And so you have to say his tactics have been successful. And while you can't necessarily predict what the outcome of this whole thing is going to be, it does require both parties to sort of be in agreement. I mean, it does require China to acknowledge that these are problems and for China to see that they have an incentive in correcting it. And I think President Trump has done better than any president in our lifetimes in addressing that issue.
Yeah, I cannot disagree with that at all. I cannot. You and I totally are in alignment with that. He has heavily taken, and you know what else is really encouraging, Michael, what's really positive to me? And this is really a deal changer to me. He has, and you know where I'm going. He's done this in broad daylight, number one. Broad daylight, people. He does everything in broad daylight. I mean, just right out there in broad daylight. But he's also, he did it when he wasn't supposed to do it. And let me explain what that means. As a candidate running for the presidency, he wants to be reelected, correct? 2020 is coming, right? So if he's going to be reelected, politicians never do things that are unfavorable. You don't want to rock the boat. Now, economically, the country has been doing fantastic. I mean, economically, and everyone's bragging, and we know they're bragging because the left can't say anything bad about it. And this is a real problem for them. So they, you know, and they're losing Russia and everything else. So they're looking for the next thing they can sort of point at, whatever that might be, because that's politics. That's dirty business of politics on the high seas. But here's the thing. Many people come out and say Trump is an idiot. He's out of his mind for doing this China thing just before an election. They're already campaigning on the other side. We are in the midst of a general election already, people. And why would he do this? Well, Michael, you're not supposed to do that when you're a president. So why would this man break the rules? Because there's no president that would ever jeopardize his second term. So he's either got to be very confident or very stupid. Which is it?
He's confident. I think you've had every president in modern times sort of speak rhetorically to this problem and then in turn do almost nothing, which is why on a quantifiable basis, you've seen what was an $84 billion trade deficit in 2000 evolve into this $420 billion trade deficit, and see the complete departure of, you know, segments of industry and tens of thousands of workers and jobs that have been lost. And so I think, you know, Trump has sees it's been, I think, a mutual relationship between the voters and Trump and the voters, meaning I think the voters for the most part understood, hey, this is a problem and that we need to tackle it head on. And then Trump came along and said, you know, this is a problem. We need to tackle it head on. And I think there's been a great unity between a fantastic leader and the American voting public, which has sustained the political support. And interestingly, if you look at what China's response has been in their targeted tariffs, they have sought not to recklessly respond to the U.S., but to target the Trump political base. And that's been one of the issues that there's been, one of the reasons there's been so much focus on rural America and particularly on farmers in trying to raise the cost of this, because China very astutely has realized that the political tables have turned in the U.S. and the American voters now want to see this issue resolved really for the first time in three or four decades. And one of the benefits of being as active as long as I've been is I remember what the rhetoric was on this issue back in the late 1980s and early 1990s, because we saw the issue developing. We saw that there was this trade deficit. We saw that the China economy was growing then at a low double-digit GDP, vastly greater than our own. But we were told by our leaders that this was a positive thing, that ultimately the growth of the Chinese economy would lead to political liberalization, and that in turn would lead to free market reforms, and that China would be, you know, a great partner in global democratization and human rights and in mutual economic growth. And in reality, the complete opposite has occurred. As the Chinese economy has grown, China has become more and more repressive. It's one of the worst, most egregious violators of human rights in the world. They have become a strategic threat to our interests just about everywhere, including, as you correctly said, in the South China Sea, which is very problematic. They've cooperated with us unsurprisingly little. They're you know, one of the continuing to interact and support the government of North Korea. They're continuing to interact and support the government of Iran. They have aligned themselves with our adversaries all over the world. We have gotten very little in the way of cooperation from China on anything that matters related to national security or human rights, even as we've had these problems economically. So really on every front, they've defined themselves, maybe not yet quite in a way that we would define them as an enemy, but they've defined themselves as clearly as an adversary and as a very serious strategic and economic geopolitical threat to the success of the United States of America. And interestingly and finally, I think when you look at the rhetoric that they had put out, as you were referring to, about leading the world's economies by 2035, they got way out in front. This was a public campaign of theirs. They were gloating about it. And when they began to see that, hey, this wasn't really floating too well in the United States, that the American people sort of had some problems with this, this, you know, transparent aspiration of global leadership, they backed off it completely. And now you hear surprisingly little about that campaign. And of course, their economy is impressive in many ways. It is the second largest economy in the world, but it still remains a distant second from the standpoint of total GDP. And our you know, $19 trillion economy continues to lead the world. But that won't be the case indefinitely if we don't get our arms around this issue.
Yep.
With the departure of industries, jobs, high-tech manufacturing, all of these crucial industries that really need to be sustained, not just from an economic standpoint, but from a geostrategic standpoint. I mean, these are national security issues as much as they are economic issues.
Some of them are. Even I remember Trump talking about Apple, trying to get Apple to build their stuff here, right, Michael? You know, they were trying to get Apple to build it here. I mean, all our smartphones and phones, and they said they were going to make an investment. They were going to do something here. I don't know that that's happened yet or where it's at, but they're supposed to do something significant here. They promised or said, I believe. But there was all the smartphones, all the phones, all that technology. So what you're saying makes good sense. Most all the experts were saying, once you economically do trade and open them up and really have a great conversation with these people, they'll come around and they'll be, it'll all be good. It we'll be able to hold hands. It'll be good as we sing Kumbaya on the wind. It will be good. But he's right. You're so right, Mike. They're repressive, more repressive than ever, and they're aggressive. And the other thing that really I shrug my shoulders on all the time is when, as you say, Venezuela, all these areas, Russia, all these things, hotspots come up. And whenever it is, China's on the opposing side. They're always on the opposing side of what we want, of what America wants. And when I see that, I cringe. Michael, I think, wow, I mean, we can't even get them to support us with something so freaking logical as that. Why is that?
Right.
I mean, and that's an ideology problem that goes pretty deep, doesn't it?
I think it does, because, I mean, at least in the Cold War, when you sort of look at Nixon opening up China, I mean, we got some cooperation with China on Cold War issues. And in fairness to our leaders, I think the Cold War was such a big portion of this that we neglected what China was doing in a trade standpoint. That, of course, Cold War ends in 1991. And since then, we've had, you know, many, many years now where they could have opted to align themselves with the strategic interests of peace and democratization and standing against repressive regimes, improving their own human rights conditions at home, respecting the rights of religious and ethnic minorities in the country. And they've just done the exact opposite. And simultaneously, really pretty brazenly sought to exploit weaknesses in our own economic system and in our own trade relationships. And they've become an immensely influential force in the United States. They have infiltrated and have great influence in academia,
big time,
in the media,
yeah.
In with political leaders. You referenced that maybe some of the inside the Beltway thinking is starting to shift. I think that's right. But still, I mean, China is directly or indirectly involved in literally employing a lot of people inside the Beltway. There's a lot of people who have, I think, a disincentive to talk honestly about what's been transpiring here. And yeah, the good news is, as we said, that we have a president who very boldly has said, look, this issue has to be turned around. And it should be turned around, and it's not fair, it's not equitable, it's not reasonable, and it's certainly not in the U.S. interest to allow it to continue to perpetuate.
Which is,
it cannot be allowed to.
Which is why he did, to answer the question I asked a bit ago here, but and I see what you say, but it's exactly why he has taken the bolden step of really dealing with China and putting the tariffs on China. That should actually, truth be told, people, to all of you out, that should be refreshing to all of you. That any, and you know, we use the word politician. I know he doesn't like to be called that, but that anybody in that office would take such a stand at such a pivotal time. I can't think of a president in my lifetime who, I mean, really, I can't think of a single soul, people. I mean, in the history of, I can't think of anybody. Even back to the beloved Ronald Reagan, I can't think of anybody who would have, before an election like this and a general election heating up, have a legitimate trade war with a legitimate partner and an adversary and a competitor. But on different days, it could be about anything. So that makes this really unusual, Michael, what we say right now. I just want people to grab on to that. It's an important point that shows you that Trump isn't doing it for self-gain. He's not doing it for the next seat. That's what makes that so unique. That's so refreshing to me, Michael. You talked about education a moment ago. I want to talk to you about education, academia you just spoke about here. Here's a perfect case. As you just said, they're eating our lunch and dinner here and then some. And so the Chinese students occupy a huge percentage of the student population at our major universities, friends. In fact, many of them were caught up in that scandal that just happened, by the way, out of on the West Coast, and said there was a language barrier. Spent some of them that had high influence of money, spent a lot of money to get their kids some of those big Ivy League schools, by the way. But they're in major colleges and universities here, and they're focused on cutting edge technology, high technology. They're, you know, in the undergraduate graduate schools. They're involved in big research projects and things of that nature. And I guess the question you have to ask yourself is how much of a threat is that? Because, you know, a lot of this ends up going back to China. It doesn't stay here. Isn't that the case?
Well, yeah, that is the case. And obviously at the core of one of these issues has been, you know, literally the theft of our intellectual property and cybersecurity issues and their ability to reverse engineer our products. I mean, this is not an issue of them beating us economically on fair terms. This is literally an issue of
China cheating
on the way to leadership. And that's really at the core of these discussions. You know, as conservatives, we're always taught that trade tariffs are a very negative thing. And in an ideal or an idealistic way, they are. But what's intriguing to me is that there is no ideological alternative that's out there. When you hear those advocates who are saying that tariffs are detrimental to the U.S. economy, they have not offered an explanation as to how China has ascended to global leadership and grown their economy so quickly with tariffs at the centerpiece of their economic strategy. They haven't been hauntingly silent in criticizing China's tariffs, meaning if you were an ideological opponent of tariffs, wouldn't you for the last three or four decades be, you know, have China at the forefront of your priorities? They've been very silent on that. I think most importantly, they've not offered any strategic alternative, meaning if we did nothing, if we just sort of did what Obama did or, you know, what the Bushes or Clinton did and allowed this trade deficit to continue to snowball.
Right.
There's not really any explanation from the other side as to how they would ever reverse the departure of industries and jobs. And I think honestly, if you talk to them privately, they'd say, well, that's fine. That's the way the market works. And I've heard these opponents say that if China wants to subsidize our consumption, that's fine. That's great. That's even positive. But it overlooks the reality that you cannot undermine wages and jobs in the way that we've been doing and have an economy that sustains. And back to what you said earlier about short-term versus long-term thinking, which I completely agree with, focusing on the consumption side of this is a very short-term way of looking at it. We need to sustain our industry leadership. We need to create jobs. We need to be able to increase wages. And all of that means fixing this China trade issue.
Yeah, it's at the core of it, clearly. Well, you also have factors of artificial intelligence coming that is going to be a game changer as well. And being ready for what's going to happen next is vitally important. When you need tariffs to level the playing field, when you're using them to level the playing field and you have to use them as such, then that is what you have to do. It's either that or you continue to stand out in a 90 mile hour wind and get blown on your ass, which is what was happening.
Exactly. And I look at it much like the issues of war and peace. I mean, nuclear weapons are not a positive thing either. I mean, when we talk generally about the ability to obliterate the world many times over, that's certainly not a constructive thing. But if you want to talk about how was the Cold War won, how has the peace been sustained? It's been through our strength and our ability to defend ourselves in that way. And I don't see this trade dispute really all that differently. Tariffs are bad, but they're short. The tariffs, our implementation of tariffs is a tactic on the way to ultimately, hopefully, the elimination of tariffs and the respective intellectual property and 100%. An end to this reverse engineering and their forced technology transfers and their currency manipulation and all of their other wrongdoings that have really been cheating the system.
Well, because they're, as you say, that's well said, buddy. That is really well said because they're not playing fair. They're not playing fair. Like you say, if everything was even, and even if we had a dollar for dollar trade policy, I mean, it would all be love. I mean, we'd be in heaven with that, but it's not fair, which really does begin to make me realize how valuable and how precious and how awesome we the people really are. I have to tell you, Michael, I got to take just a moment to say we talk about American exceptionalism. And I've been talking to you folks out there for a few shows now about, you know, you heard some pretty dramatic conversation. But I want to tell you, I'm very optimistic in the future of America. I will prove that to you over time here as you hear some of these conversations. But I think this is one deal that sometimes you have to take a step backward, I would say to you, or you have to take a couple of steps back before you can step forward. This is one of those cases with China, very clearly. We've got to step back before we can step forward. It's not a fair game. But when you think of America and you think of American exceptionalism and I credit We the People, pure innovation. I mean, most of the beautiful innovations in society have come from America. This is why this country has become what it is. But again, as de Tocqueville wrote in Democracy in America, you can't take this stuff for granted, people. I've been pointing this out to you every day. You can't take it for granted. So we have to be up on our very best. And we're only as good as today and tomorrow. You can't rely on the past. We got to rely on today and tomorrow so we can defy the odds and not be another crumbling empire. We would be now defined. That would be really, to me, what American exceptionalism means. And my final thought, Michael, is that American exceptionalism to me is that we would defy the odds. We would be the first. We would be the first power. I use the word power, not empire, but the first power to be able to make it past 300 years. That would be amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's a point well taken. You can never take for granted the freedoms we have in this country. You cannot take for granted the constitutional, you know, the genius of our Constitution, okay, the best in the history of the world. You can't take for granted our economic superiority and predominance in the world. All of these things require day-to-day diligence, which gets back to the point you made originally, that we cannot be thinking just about tomorrow or the next day. And that's not even just politically, not just about the elections, but even in corporate America, where that largely the thinking is, you know, quarterly results to quarterly results. We need to be thinking in long-term ways about how we're going to sustain our leadership and hopefully grow our leadership in the world. Yeah. For the first time, we have an American economy that is ascending, and we have a Chinese economy that is descending. So while the Chinese economy, I think, you know, remains up there close to 7% GDP growth a year, which is actually higher than our own, that's down considerably from where it was. And President Trump, through tax cuts and regulatory relief, has our economy, I think, trending to over 3% growth for the first time in well over a decade. Job creations, you know, over 5 million jobs created, wages starting to rise. So we're at a period, if we're ever going to sustain any damage in trying to resolve this long-term challenge, we are in a better position than China to be able to sustain.
Well, that's the basis.
The costs of that. Okay. Yes. I mean, it'll always be the case. So that really, I think, points to the need to address it right now. And it's the opportune time with the perfect leader to do it.
Well, that's well said. I mean, that's the basis of why he's doing it, Michael. That's the only basis. Because if it wasn't all of that, if the cards weren't stacked the way they were, I don't think you could do this. You could not take on China like this. So potentially the cards have stacked the way they need to so we can deal with this. You figure if there's a new NAFTA deal now, folks, and we've got a new deal here with Mexico and Canada as that gets ratified, and then you have a new trade deal with China, now you're definitely moving the chess pieces around, the chess game here.
Yeah.
And these are big pieces.
Potentially.
Yeah, these are big pieces. And that opens up all kinds of opportunities for trade. There's no doubt about it. And again, this is about having, as Michael said early on, having your priorities in order. It's about the horse and the cart thing, people. Which do you put first, right? Well, you better put the horse up front so you can drag the cart with your friends. So, and that's probably what we've done here. You deal with a little pain sometimes, but the end result will be worth it.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Well, the out-and-out perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out-loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Now listen, it's either an opportunity right now or it's a problem, depending again how you look at it. You know, is it an opportunity or a problem? It is definitely something that had to be wrestled with. It was definitely the tiger in the room that had to be wrestled with. The question is the timing, as we just pointed out with Michael, was the timing right? Was this the right time to do it? It is definitely brazen that you do this going into a general election. I have to say that. And so let me bring on here Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst. She specializes in political matters and terrorism. And her book, she'll find on the America Out Loud bookstore. Her show, by the way, is on Wednesday. You'll catch our news magazine. We're building out 5 o'clock time, before our time, actually, at 5. You'll be able to hear different voices throughout the week on the news magazine. So, also, Dennis Santiago is here. And Dennis is, both of them are, by the way, weekly columnists and writers on the platform. But Dennis is a, really, he's an interesting thinker. He looks at things differently than most people. And that probably comes from, he credits himself being pretty good with asymmetric warfare. And that's kind of, that's what I always take out of your intro, Dennis, is the fact you're looking at things differently. And you look at them using today's technology and modern tools and how those work against us historically. Do either of you believe that this was a mistake, that Trump should not have charged the tariffs to China, and that this was the wrong move? Do you not believe that?
Yeah, I think this was an outstandingly smart and savvy move on the part of President Trump.
Dennis, do you agree with that, Dennis?
Yeah, I do. I think this is a it's a coil spring that's been wound up for quite a long time. And like Michael pointed out, you know, there are only certain windows where you can act. And if you fail to act, that's actually the main problem that happens with national interests, is sometimes we let these opportunities go by. And in this case, we're not. So I think it's very positive for us and kind of for the world as well.
Right. Interesting. Sometimes we let these opportunities go by, he says. How about like most all the time they do that? The, as I point out, the puppets in Washington. It's so accurate, Dennis, what you say. And then some, as I say. So Ilana, does this happen now when Xi Jinping and Donald Trump get together in a couple of months here? Is this when this takes place with this conversation? And what do you think really happens here? How do you get China to back off? Because what America is asking for is fair trade, just fair trade. Not asking for anything crazy. Don't need a magic hat. Don't need a magic trick. Just fair trade. What's so hard about that?
Well, it isn't hard from our point of view, but I think one of the mistakes that America has made for generations has been to make the assumption that the people that we are dealing with in other countries think the same way we do. And what, in this case, for example, America thinks as fair, what the president thinks is fair, is not necessarily what China thinks is fair. China likes the way it's been able to steal from America, and it wants to continue doing that. And it is apparently, that's the biggest problem. That's what they couldn't agree on. And in fact, that's what they backed off from. China seems to be weighing, in my view, the pros and cons of what they consider to be fair trade with the U.S. and versus the benefits of continuing their policy of intellectual property theft, which is, if to put it simply, appropriation versus innovation. They want to build their economy based on the theft of other people's intellectual property. And I would venture to say that this may be their downfall, because like Japan, you know, Japan started this way. They started taking other people's technology and putting it into their products. And they weren't going anywhere until they started innovating on their own, and then their economy just exploded. And I think what we're seeing in China is they're weighing these two things, innovation versus appropriation. Right now, they're choosing appropriation. But I'm not sure that it's going to impact their economy negatively in the long run, and this is exactly what's happening. Their economy is actually failing.
Yeah, they're
failing. And these tariffs are going to put Chinese companies out of business. I think we still have to wait and see what's going to happen. We don't know.
Is pride the biggest problem here? I mean, Xi Jinping is he's now anointed for life. As long as he wants to stay there and hang around to run the empire, he can be there. So is it pride? Because if you're looking at a one-on-one deal and just fair trade, they've been robbing the bank for decades. They just want to continue, but now they got caught robbing the bank, Dennis. Their hand is in the vault. And now we're asking them to back off. We're not necessarily going to, you know, how far are we going to penalize them, but we want what's fair.
They're definitely a very proud people, right? And at this point in time, the way they've managed their internal political system, they have conditioned their people to be what I would call hyper-patriotic. I mean, blindly patriotic to Mother China. To the point that I think they've lost perspective on things that are going on. You have to remember that one of the reasons that China became the outsourced capital of the world is because back 20, 25 years ago, U.S. business was firing the American unions from manufacturing in this country because it was costing them too much, and they found a lower cost source of supply in China. And but now we're at the point where the forces of economics are saying that that is not necessarily the lowest cost means of production or global supply anymore. And it's China's turn to basically face the fact that the honeymoon period is coming to an end. And that's a very difficult thing for prideful people to understand. Now, you know, and if you look at the reactions here, you know, like look at Walmart. Walmart is already is telegraphing, they are already beginning to look for alternative ways to supply their system so that they're no longer dependent on China. If you look on the Chinese side, you look at Huawei, they're already saying we're looking for ways to not be dependent on the United States.
Do you think that could be an opportunity for Mexico and Central America countries and others? Could that be an opportunity?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, here's the big strategic question. I mean, you know, I would think most of the countries in the rest of the world, the EU, Russia, the rest of the Western Hemisphere should be looking at this going like, hey, maybe it's our turn. Because here's the thing that I watch carefully in the background, and you look at U.S. business and its resistance to actually making capital investments back into the U.S. economy domestically, you know, they're afraid it's going to cost them too much here. So I'm wondering, when all this is said and done, let's say we get a partial or even a more than partial, substantial divorce from the way that we have China and America codependent on each other.
Right.
Will we repatriate that industry back to the United States, as some people are hoping we do in this country? Or are we just going to shift the outsourcing to somewhere else in the world?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, that's a good question. Well, let me say this. I think that if Trump has something to say about it, he wants it made in America. He's been on, a Made in America tour in recent days here.
Yes,
and
he has.
Yeah, right. He wants it made here. So he's understanding that. And I think that's – and he also understands how our manufacturing has been gutted out. As you just said, when they all went there, and the unions had a part of that, but they all wanted a lower price point.
Yeah, you know who the biggest resistance to that movement of repatriated to America is? It's Wall Street, right? You watch the stock market go, what? We gotta put money back into U.S. infrastructure? No, that's not how we want to do it. That costs too much.
Yeah,
you
know, so
watch the stock market's vibrating off of this because they know it adds to their cost.
Yeah, the stakes are very, very high. There's no question in my mind. Some of the other things we discussed, Ilana, was, again, the threat of, you know, militarily, the South China Seas that I had brought up. And, in the bigger conversation, it's for another day, and we will get there and talk more about that with you and have you on there. But tell me what kind of a threat do you think that is?
Well, I think it is a threat, but I would say that the threat is much broader, and we shouldn't just limit it to the South China Sea. China just came out with the foreign minister just came out with a statement that says that China supports Iran against the United States. And that was just very, very recently. And what he's showing is that China is repositioning itself in opposition to the United States in more than one area. It's not just economic, it's also political, it's also international. And we know that China and Iran have been working together. We know that China has been working with North Korea. What they're doing is firming up these positions with the people with the countries who are our adversaries. Now, when this is happening in the midst of these economic talks, and where, in fact, the talks have broken down, I think we need to look at this very, very carefully, because we have a situation in the Middle East which is also about, if not to explode, it's getting very hot. And Iran is, on the one hand, the Ayatollah came out the other day and said there will be no war with the United States. But on the other hand, they're doing everything possible to start a war. And so it's And this is all connected to China. There are no isolated countries anymore. The countries like China, the big countries, the important countries, they're working in partnership with other countries. And if we don't see that, and we don't see the connections and the web of activity, it's going to hurt us in the long run.
So is China, in your view, in just an adversary or an enemy?
I think we're talking semantics now, and I don't think it matters that much. I think what matters is the reality. I'm reluctant to tie it down to a word or to simple language because the situation is very complex. I would say that we have to be very mindful of where China is coming from, what they want, and how they think, because we have to get somehow on their wavelength so we understand that the way they think is different from the way we think. They do not come to the same conclusions we come to when they look at the same things.
Right. Well,
and so that's what happened with our negotiations. They decided that they were going to walk away rather than accept a way of thinking that they do not agree with.
Which is why it fell apart in the way that it did.
They want to steal from us. And
well, they've
we don't
been
want
robbing
to,
the bank. Really they want to continue to rob the bank. Dennis, the point that Alana points out that I talked to Michael about as well was the fact that they are just, I mean, yeah, they're ripping us off. We see that. But we've allowed them. The political leaders have allowed them to do this. And they've been doing it forever. It's become a way of life. So we've built this adversary into a way of life thinking now. And they have this way that it's okay to screw America over. It's perfectly part of the plan. And the trade deficits are all part of the plan. It's all baked into the cake. We've helped them build their industries and their economies there. And we've done a lot for China. I mean, they may not admit it, but we have. And so, but now, back to the big point I ask you, and our final thought is, whatever we're for, they're against. Come out and support Iran. Does that surprise anybody?
They are, in a very macabre way, the United States' most important partner in global stability going forward. Now, and I say that with trepidation, okay? Because China has some very difficult choices to make. Militarily, it is not lost upon them that if they were to express themselves with power, they risk becoming the next global power that suffers the fate of the greater East Asia co-prosperity sphere. It did not go well for the last guys that tried that. Mm-hmm. And they know this. Mm. So if you overextend yourself and get cocky, they know there's a price to pay for it. We know this for ourselves too. We are the only people on this planet that are capable of making that mistake. And it is in both of our interests to make sure that neither one of us does.
How are stupid politicians let them get away with as much as they've gotten away with economically? I mean, it's sick. Again, it just goes you to show you how well run, you know, Washington, D.C. is clearly. It should give everybody pause for thought here. China is just one more step and one more challenge on the road to a continuous, prosperous America. And making the right decisions are key. They're vital. My message to we the people, it's time to get involved and get loud.